Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's call is being recorded. And now, your host for today's call, Ms. Kristen Martin. Ms. Martin, please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Rufus. Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Kristen Martin, and I'm a care manager for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's presentation. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cigna.com/autism. Scroll to the current topic section in the middle of your page and click on today's topic labeled Simple Strategies for Changing Behavior. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Janet Vasquez. Janet is currently the clinical director for World Evolve in Florida. She is a board-certified behavior analyst and has over 10 years' experience working with autism and other developmental disabilities. She has also held teaching, coordinator, and advisement positions for Florida International University. Janet, thank you so much for being here today. You are welcome to start your presentation.
Oh, thank you so much for that lovely introduction. I'm so excited to be able to do this. And as I was approached to do this training, I thought about what would parents benefit most from. And so that leads into the topic of our presentation today, which is simple strategies to change behaviors. So the idea is that these are very simple ABA, applied behavior analysis-based techniques that a parent, a grandparent, a teacher, an older sibling could use in the home to help change behavior. So the first thing that I want to discuss with everyone is kind of the framework of how a behavior analyst views behaviors. And this is what we call the ABCs of behavior. The A stands for antecedent, the B stands for behavior, and the C stands for consequence. And these can be viewed as different pieces of a puzzle that help explain what controls and affects behavior. So what I'd like to start our presentation with is a nice, detailed, and close look of those three ABCs that I just mentioned. The first one that I'm going to focus on is antecedent. Now, what the antecedent is whatever environmental event or something that's in the environment that happens before the behavior occurs. And that's really the key there. It's something that happens before the behavior. Then the B part of our ABCs is the behavior. So at the antecedent, what is the behavior? What action did the child engage in? And then the C part of the ABCs, as I mentioned, is the consequence. And this is what happens directly after the behavior. So as a behavior analyst, what we're really looking for are the patterns in the environment, in particular the things that happen before the behavior, in other words, the antecedent, and the things that happen after the behavior, in other words, the consequence, that essentially are triggering that behavior and maintaining that behavior. And the strategies that you guys are going to learn today, as I mentioned, that are very simple and easy to use, essentially manipulate these ABCs, the antecedent, the behavior, and the consequence. So now I have a quick question for the format of the presentation. I know I did send a slide, a PowerPoint slide of the information that I'm presenting. Is that available to view, for the parents to view or the audience to view?
Yes, and again, that is available online at www.cigna.com/autism under the current topic section of Simple Strategies for Changing Behavior.
Okay, great. The reason I bring that to our attention is because in the presentation, if you have it in front of you, you'll see that on one of the slides it has a nice visual depiction of what we call the ABCs of behavior. And in that visual depiction, you'll see that the antecedent is placed directly before the behavior and the consequence is placed directly after the behavior. So now that you guys have a general overview of the variables, if you will, that we manipulate and try to control as behavior analysts, I'm going to go straight into some strategies that are very simple and easy to use that essentially manipulate those variables that I just discussed. So there's going to be a series of them. I'm going to list them first so I can give you an overview, and then what we'll do is we'll look at each one in more detail. So the simple strategies that I'm going to present today are antecedent manipulation. So these are going to involve things that we manipulate before the behavior occurs to prevent it from happening. Communication skills. Another strategy is called timeout from positive reinforcement. Another strategy is ignoring junk behavior, and I'll define what I mean by junk behavior. We're also going to discuss behavioral contracting, and the last strategy I'm going to discuss is called token economies. So the first one I want to review are the antecedent manipulations. So as I mentioned, these are strategies that we implement before the behavior occurs. And by doing that, what we attempt to do is prevent the problem behavior altogether and to promote good adaptive behavior. Now, one of the things that we have to remember about antecedent manipulation is that the effect on the behavior is short-term, because you're not necessarily manipulating the consequence. What you're doing is only manipulating the environment so the behavior doesn't occur. So any strategy, any good behavior analyst is always going to use a mixture of antecedent manipulations, or if you will, antecedent-based strategies, and also consequence-based strategies. And the list of strategies that I mentioned before actually have a mix of those two. So the first antecedent manipulation strategy that I'd like to discuss is called non-contingent attention. So this involves attention that is given throughout the day without the child having to do a good or bad behavior before you give them attention. And the logic for this is that if a child is needing your attention, instead of waiting until the child engages in the problem behavior or the bad behavior to result in your attention, this non-contingent attention will actually tackle it ahead of time. And the idea is that you're going to give that child the attention they need beforehand, so that way there's no need to engage in the problem behavior because they're already getting what they need. And with this non-contingent attention, it's as easy as maybe just, you know, attending to the child once an hour or once every half hour. But the idea is that you're giving that child the attention that they want and that they need. And by providing it, since they're already getting it, it essentially obviates the need to engage in the problem behavior. So that's the first antecedent manipulation. This antecedent manipulation strategy that we're going to talk about is simply enriching the environment. So many times what we find with children is that they engage in problem behaviors because there's idle time. They're not engaged in something. They're not consumed by something. So by simply enriching the environment and having a lot of engaging activities for the child to access, you can actually prevent problem behaviors. So when I work with a child in a session, I make sure that I have a lot of fun games and a lot of things that the child is going to interact with and have fun with. And what that'll do is it'll actually reduce that idle time that the child will engage in. And by reducing that idle time, you're going to be preventing the problem behavior. The next antecedent manipulation strategy that is very easy to use is as simple as giving the child choices. So one of the things that I do all the time, this is actually one of my favorite interventions as a behavior analyst, is I love to issue choices to the child by simply saying to the child, hey, do you want to, you know, clean your room now? Or do you want to do the dishes now? Simply by giving that choice and giving that child some control over what activity they do at that moment can help prevent problem behaviors. And because they're choosing what they can do, it can also eliminate some of those negative arguments in that situation in which you're trying to convince the child to do what you've asked. So giving choices is a very simple antecedent manipulation strategy that I have found in my experience is very effective. Another antecedent manipulation strategy that I found is very, very useful is something called behavior momentum. And behavior momentum is just a fancy way of saying you're going to build the child's momentum of compliance. So essentially, what you're going to be doing is asking the child to do very simple tasks first before you ask them to do the more difficult task. So let me give you an example. So let's say you need your child to clean their room. But you know that the minute you ask that child to clean their room, you're going to get a little bit of resistance. They're going to maybe say, no, I don't want to, or it's not that dirty. Well, by using behavior momentum, you can actually build the momentum of compliance and work that child up to the big task of cleaning their room. So what that would look like is maybe you would ask the child, oh, can you pick up this plate and put it in the kitchen? Something simple. Or can you put this, you know, piece of paper or this pen over here? Very simple tasks that are low in effort and very probable for the child to do. And then once you get a couple tasks where the child is consistently complying, then you come in with the larger task, the lower probability task, which is, hey, can you clean your room? I love this strategy because it's actually a strategy that's used in marketing a lot where, you know, you ask the consumer to do very little low-effort things and then you come in with a big request. And I find that it's very effective with children as well, that if you give them some very simple, highly probable tasks that they'll complete, you build up that momentum of compliance and then you come in with your big request. So the next antecedent manipulation strategy that I'd like to discuss, and it's very, very clear, but sometimes a little tricky to use, is just being mindful of your instructions. So sometimes what happens is that our instructions can be very wordy, and our children can get confused and lost in those instructions. But by being mindful of the clarity of your instructions, it can make a world of difference. So instead of saying something like, oh, go clean your room and I need you to clean your room because it needs to be clean because your aunt and uncle is coming, make it very clear and simple and concise. Please go clean your room. And what that does for the child is it's essentially offering that and giving them less information to process. And therefore, it's easier for them to follow through. So that's a very one of my favorite antecedent manipulation strategies because it's so easy to use. Another antecedent manipulation strategy is to be mindful of the amount of tasks that you're giving. So this is what I like to call picking and choosing your battles. So if let's say you know you ultimately want to get your child to clean their entire room. But you know that that's going to be a really big struggle. A simple antecedent manipulation strategy could be, well, let's start off with maybe a few, you know, cleanup tasks from the room. Like maybe instead of cleaning up all of their toys and all of their clothes, maybe they only start with cleaning up one or two of their toys and work up to five toys to eventually, you know, all of the toys. So gradually increasing the number of tasks. And what that does for the child is if you start off and you provide praise and that encouragement, what it will do is build motivation for the child to do the things that you ask later. And because the effort is not too great, it'll continue to foster that motivation. So that's another simple antecedent manipulation strategy that one could use in the home. There are a few more antecedent manipulation strategies that I'd like to just take a little bit of time to talk about before we start talking about those consequence-based interventions. One of them is the importance of having a semi-predictable schedule. So you're more or less your child knows, you know, what their day will be. And preparing the child for any changes that may occur is going to make a world of difference. And even things as simple as, you know, maybe having dinner at 6 or 6:30 every single day can help ameliorate problem behaviors because the child knows what to expect and when to expect it. So having that semi-predictable schedule and setting routines and having consistency in that routine from one day to the next can help prevent those problem behaviors. Now, the next antecedent manipulation ties in with the predictable schedule, and I mentioned it a little bit already. It is something as simple as informing the child of what is coming next can help prevent problem behaviors. So if you know in the morning that child's day is going to be different, let's say instead of going straight to school, the child, you're going to be making a different stop. So you, instead of going straight from home to school, you're going to be stopping at some store. Simply informing the child of that change and to expect that change can make a difference. Now, it also depends on the child's language abilities, but if the language capability is sufficient where the child can understand and process that information, then simply telling them, hey, you know, I just want to let you know that we're going to be stopping at this store really fast before we go to school can make a world of difference. The last two antecedent manipulations that I'd like to take a moment to discuss are very simple as well. One of them is setting expectations. So one of the things that I find as a behavior analyst is that sometimes problem behaviors occur because the child doesn't know what's expected from them. And so simply telling your child what behaviors you want, but really be concise and descriptive of those behaviors can really affect and prevent those problem behaviors. So, for example, let's say you're going to be going to the doctor's office. Now, again, the language capabilities makes a difference. But if you're going to be going to the doctor's office, telling the child something like, okay, when we get to the doctor's office, I need you to sit in the chair, and I need you to sit quietly, and I need you to keep your hands to yourself. So setting those expectations can make a difference. Now, one little tip that I like to give parents and other providers about setting expectations involves how you frame those expectations. So it's always best to tell the child what you want them to do and not what you don't want them to do. So, for instance, to go back to my example of the doctor's office, notice that I said to the example that I gave involved telling the child, okay, when we get to the doctor's office, I want you to sit in the chair, I want you to be quiet, and I want you to keep your hands to yourself. So I'm essentially telling the child what I want them to do. But sometimes it's very easy to say to the child, okay, when you get to the doctor's office, don't run around and, you know, don't yell and don't talk too loud. But what that does to the child is, and then it opens up more questions that then the child has to think to him or herself, well, what do I have to do? Then what are my expectations? If I can't run around, can I walk? Can I stand by the door? So that's the problem that you may find if you tell the child what not to do. But by telling the child what to do, you're being very explicit and clear about what particular behaviors you're looking for. And what that'll do is it'll stop the processing of further questions, and the child will know what's expected of them. The last and brief antecedent manipulation that I always like to encourage parents and service providers to use is to prompt the child to use what I call incompatible or alternative behaviors. So if your child oftentimes say tantrums because they don't want to do something, well, one of the things you can do, and this is linked to communication skills, which if time permits, I'd like to talk to you about a little later, is use your words. Tell me what you want. Those alternative behaviors, in this case, communicative behaviors, that can prevent problem behavior. So I know I gave you guys a lot of antecedent manipulations, and there's so many more that have been empirically validated and are highly effective, but I chose those 10 antecedent manipulations because they're fairly simple and easy to implement in the home or at school or wherever your child may be. So what I'd like to do now is switch gears a little bit and move away from antecedent-based interventions, so in other words, those little manipulations you do before the problem behavior occurs, and now talk about these consequence-based strategies. So now these are strategies that you can use after the behavior occurs. Or in some cases, they're just strategies that you're using to change the consequence of behavior. So I already discussed communication skills, and that was, as I mentioned, asking for the things that the child wants, and this could involve asking for a break, asking for your attention appropriately, expressing their physical needs, asking for help. But for the sake of time, I'm going to fast forward a little bit so we can spend a little time talking about timeout from positive reinforcement. Now, from my experience, I find that a lot of parents use timeout readily in their home. And timeout can be a very, very effective consequence of behavior. But you have to follow some key guidelines to ensure its efficacy. So first, let's talk about what timeout is. So timeout involves withdrawal of the opportunity to earn positive reinforcement, so something good, to earn something the child wants for a particular period of time. Now, because now this involves manipulating the consequence of behavior, these types of strategies, such as timeout, tend to have longer-term effects. So they can have a very pronounced effect on the problem behavior if they're used correctly. So now let's talk about some tips and guidelines about how to make timeout very effective. Now, in order to make timeout effective, we have to make a clear distinction between timeout and quote-unquote time in. Now, the reason you want to do that is because the larger the distinction between the timeout environment and the time-in environment, the more effective this strategy is going to be. So let's focus first on our time-in environment. So this is when the child is allowed to play and do all the things the child wants to do, but this time-in environment has to be desirable and fun. It has to be an environment the child really, really wants to be in. And because by making sure this time and environment is desirable and fun, what it's going to do is it's going to motivate the child to get out of timeout. Because timeout is going to be so dull and so boring that they want to do what they need to do to get out and get into that time in time quicker. So to stress that distinction, the time out environment, so wherever you take your time out, your child is, they may be in a corner and they're sitting in a chair, or I've seen some parents where they just have the child sit in a corner on the floor. But the key component there is that wherever your timeout environment is, it cannot be fun and it cannot be interesting. Because then what's going to happen, and I've seen this happen, is that the child can actually work to get in timeout because timeout is so interesting. And one of the things that I've encountered parents say to me is when they tell me they use timeout, they tell me I ask them, well, where do you take your child to timeout? Can you show me, you know, the place where you use timeout? And they take me to the child's room. And the first thing I say to the parents is, I say, wow, the child has so many great things in their room. They have their Xbox or their Leapfrog pad. There's so many fun things that the child can engage in while they're in timeout. And so what ends up happening in those situations is when a parent says, okay, go to your room, you're in timeout, it's actually not very, it's not a very disinteresting or aversive situation at all. They usually, the child say, okay, I'll go to my room in some situations. So knowing how to, and strategically making the distinction between the time in environment and the time out environment when using these timeout strategies can make a huge difference on the future probability of those problem behaviors. The other consequence-based strategy that I wanted to share with everyone is something as simple as ignoring junk behavior. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, Janet, what is junk behavior? Well, junk behavior is what can be categorized as any problem behavior that does not put others in danger. So an example could be whining or crying or yelling or rolling their eyes. So these are things that behaviors that the child can engage in, but don't necessarily put the child at risk or anyone else at risk. An example of what would not be junk behavior would be things like self-injurious behavior or aggression, because obviously that affects the child and can affect other people in their environment and place them at risk. Junk behavior such as whining and crying and yelling, those kind of things, in most situations can be safely ignored. And what happens is when you provide attention to whining and crying and these junk behaviors, what the child is getting is lots of attention. They're getting lots of proximity from you. They're getting all of what we call the social reinforcers and social things that they like in the environment. And so by ignoring junk behavior, what we're essentially doing is removing all of those social reinforcers or social things that the child likes. And when you do that consistently over time, what it does is essentially decreases the motivation to engage in those behaviors. So that's a pretty simple consequence-based strategy that one could use in the home. Now, there are a couple things that you want to do when you're ignoring junk behavior. I already mentioned one of them, and one of them means to remove your attention. Now, this means that you don't talk to the child, you don't make eye contact with the child or any kind of gestures or facial expressions, because some of those things can actually encourage more whining and crying. The first thing to do is try to remove all attention. Now, this is hard. I know some kids can be very persistent, and it's sometimes really hard to remove that attention. But one of the things that I have seen in my experience is that if you, you know, keep the course, so stay the course and stay consistent, so do this every single time the behavior occurs, what that'll do is build a learning history, and the child will learn, oh, well, when I do this, mommy and daddy don't give me this, and that'll be the learning history the child will acquire. But a couple other things you can do when you're ignoring junk behaviors to keep your cool, so stay cool. You know, little things such as, and believe it or not, with some children, I find that even by making the smallest change in your facial expression can actually encourage more junk behavior. So keeping cool and being very mindful of your body language, your facial expressions, because all of those can encourage those junk behaviors. And probably what I would say the most important strategy or tip when using this ignoring strategy is to don't give in. Because what happens is if let's say it's Monday and the child is whining and you stay the course and you make it through 3 minutes, let's say, of whining, and finally the child stops. What happens is if, let's say, on Tuesday, the child whines a little bit longer, and you make it through, let's say, 5 minutes, and you make it through 3 minutes, and then he keeps whining, and at 4 minutes, you turn to the child and say, okay, what do you want? What's essentially happening there is you're teaching the child that if I persist, that eventually mommy and daddy will attend to me. And that's the learning history that you're actually building in those situations if you don't stay consistent and continuously not give in and attend to those behaviors. So I may only have a few more minutes to present a couple more strategies. I'm hoping to talk about behavioral contracting and token economy. So let's see how far our time takes us today. But the next consequence-based strategy that I would like to discuss with you all is called behavioral contracting. And it's just a fancy way of saying that you're going to be setting up an agreement with the child, and this is typically a written agreement, so it hinges on the child having the literacy skills and the language skills to be able to follow this agreement. So it's not for every child, but for the child that do have those prerequisite skills, it's a wonderful strategy. But behavioral contracting is essentially just a written agreement between you and your child that identifies the expectations of the child and essentially the consequences for not meeting those, for meeting and for not meeting those expectations. But here's the key with these behavioral contracts is, one, they have to be age appropriate. So if you have a younger child, then obviously the language has to match what their abilities will allow for. And same thing with an older child. But probably the most important aspect or piece of a behavioral contract is to make sure that it's positive, that it outlines those things that the child wants and what's outlined in the contract are indeed things that the child really, really wants. So when I write a behavioral contract with a child, I make sure that the consequences for meeting the contract are things that the child doesn't have readily in their day-to-day life. So if I see that the child, say, for instance, plays on their leapfrog pad every single day, well, I'm probably not going to build in that as a positive consequence for meeting my expectations because the motivation is going to be really low because the child has it all the time. So So when I write behavioral contracts with a child, it's usually something that the child doesn't have access to every day, but that the child really, really likes, because that piece is what's going to help build that motivation to do the things that are outlined in the contract, so that way they can get access to the positive consequence that you've outlined. Now, there's a couple of things that you want to include in a behavior contract. So one of the things is to indicate what are the appropriate behaviors you would like your child to engage in. But it's not enough just to say what you want them to do, but you also have to indicate in that contract when you want them to do it and how often you want these behaviors to occur. So, for instance, when I write a behavior contract, it would say something like, I want you to clean your room every day at 4 o'clock. So it's telling the child what the appropriate behavior is, when I want you to do it, and how often I want you to do it. And the other piece of the contract that's very important is specifying what will be earned if expected. Now, you don't want these contracts to be negative, so you never want to write in the contract, if you don't clean your room, then you're going to lose your Xbox, something like that. You always want the contract to be positive. So you're going to put on the contract what the child will earn. So if you clean your room every day at 4 o'clock, you will be able to go to Chuck E. Cheese's on Friday, something like that. So the contract always has to have the time span from which it's going to be done. And then at the end, and this is my favorite part of the contract, because some of the kids really get excited about it, is you actually ask them to sign it. And they put their own stamp on it. And what you can do with these contracts is you can post it in their room so it serves as a reminder of what your expectations are and what they're working for, which is the biggest piece there. Now, the last consequence-based strategy that I have to say, I know I said I have a lot of favorites, I do, but by far this is my favorite consequence-based intervention. It's called a token economy. And it's just a fancy way of saying that you're going to giving the child a token for appropriate behavior. Now, the key with a token economy is that you have to identify what behaviors will earn the token. So now these little tokens could be, you know, it could be stickers, it could be a little stamp on a page. The token could be anything, but when choosing the token, it's important that it's something that the parent can control, because if the child has access to stickers, the stickers that you're going to be using for the token, then it's going to lose its value because the child can just put those tokens on their token board. So you have to choose a token, and as I said, it could be a stamp, a sticker, but it just has to be something that the child doesn't have access to or can't reproduce. But here's what I love about a token economy. So what you do is you choose the behaviors that the child will earn tokens for, and once the child earns a sufficient number of tokens, they quote-unquote can purchase things that they really want. So as an example, if I was setting up a token economy for, say, motivating the child to clean their room, and I need them to clean their room once a day, what I would do is I would set up a token economy, maybe with stickers, and say to the child, okay, so once you earn 5 stickers, so each time you clean your room, you'll get a sticker. And once you clean your room 5 times and get 5 stickers, we'll be able to take that trip to Chuck E. Cheese, or you can go to your friend's house, or whatever it is that really motivates them. And what I love about the token economy, like the behavioral contract, is that it also serves as a visual reminder of what they've done and how far they've gotten. Because if, let's say, for an example, let's say it's Monday and the child cleans their room and they get their sticker. And Tuesday they do the same thing, they get their sticker. Wednesday, and this is what I love about the token, let's say the child comes home and you see that they're maybe not necessarily resisting, but they're not really that motivated to clean the room. What you can do with the token economy is you can take the child to their token board and say, look, you have two stickers already, and all you need is five, so three more, so we can go to Chuck E. Cheese on Friday. And what that does, and I've seen it so many times in the session, in my ABA-based sessions, is that simply by seeing how many tokens they have and how many more they need, it can serve as a motivator. They see, oh, okay, I only need a few more tokens. Let me do it so I can earn the thing that I want. And it's such a simple and fantastic strategy that is highly effective if you can control the distribution of those tokens and you can control the delivery of those tokens. Now, when you use the token economy, you have to make sure that the tokens are delivered immediately after the behavior. So if the child has cleaned their room and you set up a contingency and you said to the child, okay, when you clean your room, I'm going to give you a token, and the child has cleaned their room, you have to be prepared to give that token right away. Because if you give the token, say, an hour later, or the child has engaged in so many other behaviors within that time span that the association between that token and the behavior of cleaning their room essentially will be weakened. So by making sure that you issue that token immediately after the child does whatever it is that you had asked them to do, that earned the token, will make sure that association stays strong. And the other piece that you want to make sure that you do with the token economy is make sure that you have a consistent time and day that the child can essentially exchange the tokens and purchase whatever it is they're earning those tokens for. So what you want to do is something like in the example that I gave is let's say you're asking them to clean their room Monday through Friday and they're earning one token per day. You want to make sure that on Friday, after they earn their last token, that you have an exchange time. In other words, a time where they, give you their tokens and purchase whatever it is they worked for is at the same time every day. So it could be, say, Friday at 5 o'clock. But that consistency is key because then what it does is it allows the child to know when they can expect whatever it is that they worked very diligently for. So that actually concludes my presentation, but just to do a quick little summary, I had mentioned several different antecedent-based interventions, and these included providing that attention, what we call on a non-contingent basis, so throughout the day before the child has engaged in the behavior, enriching the environment, making sure the child has a lot of engaging activities, thereby reducing idle time, giving the child choices, building that momentum of compliance, making sure that your instructions are very clear and concise, gradually fading in tasks, so not giving them too much too soon, making sure that you have a routine and a semi-predictable schedule, informing the child of what to expect next. And this can be done, can be done vocally. Setting expectations for your child and encouraging or if you will, prompting the child to use their words and their communicative abilities. So that's a summary of the antecedent strategies that we discussed. And just a quick summary, because I know I'm running out of time here, of the consequence-based strategies that we discussed was time out. And remember that the time in and the time out distinction is very important when using timeout procedures. The other one that we discussed is ignoring junk behavior. So making sure that you remove all of your attention and that you keep your cool and that you always don't give in, that you stay consistent. The other one, consequence prevention that we talked about, or strategy that we talked about, is behavioral contracting. So that written agreement that outlines the expectations and the positive consequence for meeting those expectations. And then the last one was the token economy, which enables that child to earn with a certain number of tokens, will purchase those wonderful do. So those are many, many, and there's so many more. I mean, there's so many great strategies that have been empirically validated, but these are some simple ones that can be used at home with your child, really of any age. So that actually wraps up my presentation, and I know that we wanted to leave, you know, about 10 or 15 minutes for question and answer. So at this time, I'm more than happy to take any questions you may have.
And ladies and gentlemen, to help us evaluate and improve our program, we ask that you please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please wait until the entire question and the response options have been read before making your selection. Question number one. This session provided me with education on simple strategies for changing behavior. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, or star 4 if you strongly disagree. Again, this session provided me with education on simple strategies for changing behavior. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Or star 4, strongly disagree. Question number 2. This session educated me on communication skills to help teach a child to help prevent problem behaviors. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, or star 4 if you strongly disagree. Again, this session educated me on communication skills to help teach a child to help prevent problem behaviors. Star 1, strongly agree, star 2, agree, star 3, disagree, or star 4, strongly disagree. Question number 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, or star 4 if you strongly disagree. Again, overall, this session met my expectations. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, or star 4 if you strongly disagree. Question number 4. I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, or star 2 if you do not agree. Again, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, or star 2 if you do not agree. And our final question. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Star 1, I am the parent of a child with autism. Star 2, I am a family member of a child with autism, or star 3 for other. Again, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Press star 1 if I am the parent of a child with autism, star 2, I am a family member of a child with autism, or star 3 for other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you would like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is disengaged to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open to ask your question, and we ask that you state your first name before posing your question. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal. And we will go to our first question.
Hi, Janet. My name is Michelle, and I have a 10-year-old high-functioning with autism. And the problem that I'm having with him is when he demonstrates behaviors with hitting, you know, or biting or that kind of thing. And I try to, you know, punish him or remove him from the area, you know, or whatever. You know, I'm the bad guy all the time, and he's telling me you don't love me and that kind of stuff and crying and saying I don't love him and he should just run away and all that kind of stuff. And so I get the guilt trip from him, and I'm wondering what I can do about that. He doesn't realize that I'm being punished for what he did, you know?
Sure. That's a great question, Michelle. And this is actually something that I have to always be cognizant of as a behavior analyst when I work in my one-to-one sessions, is I have to make sure that I have a balance of positive reinforcement and punishment. So, yes, I know there'll be times where I have to say, put the child in time out, or maybe I have to remove something the child wants, which is what we call response cost. But if I know that I'm going to be using those strategies, then it means I need to work that much harder to make sure that I'm also associated with good things. So associated by, you know, and by good things, it could be maybe giving positive attention and making sure preventing a disease, making sure that when the child does something good and that is an appropriate behavior, that you're trying to take each one of those opportunities to either praise the child or provide the child with something they really want. And it's a very delicate balance, and it's one that takes a little bit of finessing. But what it sounds like there is, and I've seen this a lot with parents where maybe you have one parent that's kind of the disciplinarian and the other parent that's kind of the fun parent, is what's really important is, you know, for the fun parent, it's great. But for the disciplinarian parent, you oftentimes hear like, oh, I don't like you, or you always make me do this. And what I would strongly suggest for that person is making sure that you have that balance, that you're not just the one that's always, you know, sending them to time out or removing the things that they like, but you're also making a very, very strong and concerted effort to, you know, point out the things that they're doing and provide that positive attention. Or even, you know, let's say the child does something phenomenal one day, but you're the one that delivers, you know, that new game or whatever it is that they earn for doing that great thing. And one, it's sometimes tricky, but that balance can definitely be striked.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. I hope that was helpful.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you do find that your question has been asked and answered before you could ask it and you would like to remove yourself from the question roster, you may do so by firmly pressing the star key followed by the digit 2. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And as a final reminder, that is star 1 to ask a question. And again, if you are on a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute button is disengaged so that your signal can reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we just had a question that came in, and we will go to that question.
Hello, my name is Maria, and I have a 10-year-old, but he hasn't been diagnosed as autistic. How do you get your child to be tested for autism? Is that a regular doctor? Do I take him somewhere special? He's been diagnosed with ADHD, and the tips you gave me, basically, you gave me everything for my son.
So, Maria, just to make sure I understand your question, and I really do appreciate your question. From what I gather, you're asking about what provider should I go to in order to receive a diagnosis of autism?
Yes.
Well, you have a couple different options. I think the best thing to do in this situation, Maria, is probably to speak to the case manager of your insurance. As a behavior analyst, I'm unfortunately not credentialed to make diagnostic recommendations.
Okay.
But with your insurance provider, you should have a case manager, and they will definitely be able to direct you to someone who can help you to get that diagnosis if necessary.
Yes, this is Kristen, and we encourage you to definitely call into the number on the back of your insurance card,
mm-hmm.
and so you can be connected to our autism team, and we would love to go over your benefits and the different options for testing for your child.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And we will go to our next question.
My name is Teresa, and I'm actually I have a 10-year-old nephew that we're in the process of adopting. His behavior at home has really improved dramatically. However, he gets in trouble every day at school. They've implemented a plus and minus and zero chart, but that doesn't seem to be working. And I was just wondering, do I need to be giving him consequences at home for his behavior at school?
Great question, Teresa. And it really depends, but what it sounds like, well, the minute I hear from a parent that there's a system at school that's not working, my immediate follow-up question is, well, what's the environment or the consequences, if you will, that are surrounding the delivery of the plus or minus? Because when I hear it's not working, what I really hear is the child's not motivated by that consequence. There's something that maybe there's a problem with the delivery, or maybe there's a problem with the positive reinforcement. So when the child does something that's appropriate in school, that maybe that's not frequent enough. But there's lots of follow-up questions that I would have around why the plus minus zero chart isn't working at school. In terms of your second question, there are things you can do at home. And I'll give you a great example. I worked with a little girl that was actually around your child's age. She was a little younger. She was 8. But what happened is they had a happy face, sad face system at school where it was a communication system for the parents. So the teacher, if the child had a good day, the child would come home with a happy face. If the child had a bad day, the child would come home with a sad face. And so what I did with that parent, which was very effective for her, was I did implement a consequence-based strategy in which when the child came home with a happy face, there was, a very positive, maybe they got, an extra 30 minutes with TV time, or maybe they got an extra 30 minutes on their Xbox or whatever it is that they really like. Maybe they got extra time on it. Or if they came home with a happy face, they got something new that they really wanted. So if your child has been asking for, a new toy or a new something, we set up something where for big ticket items, what I call it, if the child came home with, say, 3 happy faces within a week, then they would get, that new big toy. And one, happy face would lead and maybe to get ice cream when they came home or something like that. But when the child came home with a sad face, then in this situation we used what's called a response cost procedure, and she actually lost TV time or she lost dessert in this instance with dinner. And that really worked well because what I find as a behavior analyst, and that's always an obstacle or a hurdle, if you will, that I have to jump over, is that I can't control the school environment. And sometimes, in some cases, some schools do not allow behavior analysts to come in. But in some cases, by having a communicative system where I can see the kind of day, if you will, that the child had at school, I can put in systems at home to try and ameliorate, some of those behaviors. Teresa, I hope that answers your question, and I hope you find that helpful.
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions on our roster. Therefore, Ms. Markson, I will turn the conference back over to you for any closing remarks.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Janet, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Seminar next month, June 13th, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, where we will be discussing increasing your child's social interactions with peers. Thank you and have a great day.
And ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.